The purpose of Retire with Style is to help you discover the retirement income plan that is right for you. The first step is to discover your retirement income personality. Start by going to risaprofile.com/style and sign up to take the industry's first financial personality tool for retirement planning. CCRCs aren't your parents' retirement communities. Well, probably not anyway. But they are a pretty interesting model.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Retire with Style. I'm Wade, and I'm here with Alex. And we're joined this week by Rob Cordeau, an advisor at McLean Asset Management based in New Hampshire. A frequent guest to the show. I think, Rob, this may be at least the third episode you've joined us with. And we're very excited to have you here because you sent us a list of potential topics related to CCRCs, or Continuing Care Retirement Communities. And I was impressed as we've got an opportunity to really dig in deep with someone who knows quite a bit about the CCRC world. And so we're happy to have you on the show today, Rob.
Thanks, Wade. Good to be here.
Yeah, and I think it is the third episode, if not more. I'm just trying to recall real quick.
Yep, third one.
Great insights in the past episodes, and I think we're going to have a great conversation around CCRCs today. Before we get started with that, Alex, what's anything new in your world that you need to address before we?
I need to address something. It's not CCRCs. Wait, I'm almost embarrassed to bring this up because you got it wrong. It's CCRCOs.
Okay. CCRCOs.
ROs. CCROs.
Making up his own acronyms there.
No. That was. Yes, for those of you who didn't listen to the pre-game show, which is everyone but Rob and Wade, Wade made a point to talk about how I was referring to it in one episode as CCRO. So I think in that tradition, let's continue it. What do you think, Rob? Or are we going to use the normal financial planning convention?
The normal convention, CCRCs. Put that and not confuse anyone.
Yes, lots of acronyms. But yeah, I mean, Rob, I think just to get started. So in a past episode, we did do a brief overview of what CCRCs were, but it was pretty brief on our behalf. And if we could just really start there with a quick introduction to the idea of what we're talking about today, what a CCRC is and how it relates to long-term care planning.
And the only comment to that, Rob, just to get one in more, is we get a lot of feedback from these about actual use cases and things like that. And so that's why I think it's great to have advisors. I think the saying goes in theory. Theory and practice are the same, but in practice, they're not. You know what I mean? Yeah. Someone said that. I don't know who it's like an old quote. But you get the joke, right, Rob? So just take it away so people have something tangible that they can run with.
Yeah, we've spoken with numerous clients. I don't know. We've probably assisted a dozen clients in locating and choosing a CCRC over the years. So, and we've looked at more than that because sometimes clients are choosing between several. So it's given us a little bit of insight into the due diligence process, what they are, how they work, which has been helpful. But yeah, in terms of what a CCRC is, as the name implies, it's a retirement community, continuing care retirement community that typically has all the types of care that you might need in retirement on one campus. So it would have typically independent living, assisted living, and skilled nursing care all on the same campus. And what that does, there are a few benefits to that. It allows you to be in one place and have a network of friends, family. It's in one location. And then as you transition, you need more care. You transition from independent living to assisted living. You can stay on the same campus or even go to a nursing care rather than going to a facility that's 50 miles away. You can stay right on the same location and get that care. The financial piece, we'll get into that a little, but it usually requires a sizable entrance fee up front and then a monthly service fee ongoing that covers not only your rent for where you're staying, but also in some cases, some of the services that you receive. So is an interesting approach to handling long-term care, a little different than a long-term care policy, for example, or self-funding. But it's a way to sort of plan for that potential future need for long-term care in a retirement community package, if that makes sense.
And before digging more into the financial side about how CCRCs can interact with long-term care insurance, or in some cases even be an alternative to having long-term care insurance, you had an interesting idea that the way you described to clients that you work with what the issue is, why you were even looking at CCRCs in the first place as a potential alternative to long-term care insurance as it became so expensive. If you could talk a little about that.
Sure. Yeah. And the long-term care industry has gone through this incredible evolution. If you think about it, life insurance has been around for hundreds of years, right? You go back to Europe and they had life insurance before this country started. But long-term care insurance is a relatively new animal. It was just that we're going back a few decades. So it's gone through a lot of changes because it's really in its infancy, if you think about it. So a lot of these long-term care insurance companies didn't have decades or centuries of data. They didn't have a lot of accurate data like life insurance companies have on life expectancy. There were a lot more factors with long-term care, right? Cost of care, how long people would need the care, and so forth. So long-term care insurance carriers struggled a bit in pricing these products, and they've gone up in price considerably. If you look at what long-term care insurance cost maybe back in the 90s or early 2000s with what it costs today, it's significantly more expensive. They figured out that they mispriced it in the early days. So long-term care is really expensive. And it creates this environment where most people choose not to even get it. They just take the I hope I don't need it planning approach, right? Hopefully I don't ever need that sort of care. And then if they do, then they end up depleting their investment portfolio. If their portfolio is not big enough, or if they stay long enough, then they might need to even tap into Medicaid, you know, the state program to assist. So I think that's the approach some people take. If they embrace long-term care, it's fairly expensive. And I'm sure the two of you will dig into that topic in another podcast. So CCRCs have become almost an alternative in some way, for some people anyway, they might choose to skip long-term care insurance and instead invest in a continuing care retirement community.
Yeah, and there's different financing models for how CCRCs work, so we'll have to break that down, because something that's more the type A style with a larger upfront cost, that's, I think we can start with that in terms of talking about how that can be an alternative to having long-term care. But later, we'll talk about different styles as well, where it's a lower upfront costs, but higher ongoing monthly costs. Then you might want to make sure that there's the ability to interact with any long-term care insurance available. But so starting with that first part, how are clients thinking about positioning CCRCs as an alternative to having long-term care?
Yeah, so, you know, thinking about that first type where there's a large entrance fee up front, and it's not uncommon to see a sizable six-figure entrance fee. So imagine a community that has a $500,000 entrance fee, and the residents would pay that, and then on an ongoing basis, they would have a monthly service fee that they would pay. So some clients have positioned it that at some point in their retirement, they probably want to downsize from their current residence. And this might be because it's too big, it's too expensive. Maybe they want to move to where their adult children and grandchildren are. Maybe it's multiple floors and they want single floor living. So those are all sort of various decision factors that might move someone to want to make a move at some point in retirement. And for those folks, if they have a house, let's say their house is worth $700,000 and they want to jump into a community that has a $500,000 upfront entrance fee, they might essentially extract the equity out of their house, use those proceeds for the entrance fee to jump into the facility. And then they have a little bit extra And it sort of kills two birds with one stone, right? They're able to start to plan for their long-term care needs. They've moved into an environment where they don't have to deal with the snow plowing and the lawn mowing. It's like condo living in that sense, right? Where there's shared spaces that you can use depending on the facility. So for a lot of folks, it's a natural transition. They're looking to do something like this anyway when they get to their mid-70s and later. They're looking for something that requires less upkeep and less stairs. So in that sense, they can often transition, extract the equity from their house, just transition it into an entrance fee to the facility.
Rob, just two questions. Again, putting myself in the seat of somebody listening in who's a consumer. A question that I think they would naturally ask are these like per person or is it like for the room?
Good question. Yeah, it's usually the bulk of it. I should put it this way. The second person is a much smaller number. So there's usually a charge for the second person, but it's much smaller. Some communities will do that on just the monthly service fee. So oftentimes, in essence, you're buying two things with this entrance fee, if you think about it. You're buying a condo, if you will, right? Your independent living apartment, you're buying that and your right to live in it through your lifetime. But if there's two people involved, you're buying it for two lifetimes. So that costs a little bit more, right? The chance of the second person passing away a little later. And then you're also buying the right to be in this system that's going to guarantee you some care. So you're buying, it's almost like you're prepaying for some long-term care as well. So that's why the price does usually have to go up for the second person.
Okay. And then that's fine. I just wanted them to do their mental math.
If you're looking for more personal advice, please note that our show is sponsored by McLean Asset Management. Learn more at McLeanAM.com. That's McLeanAM.com. McLean Asset Management is a wealth management firm where we help you design and implement the right retirement plan for you.
Hey, Rob, I have a question just listening in here. You just because of the wording, I want to make sure everyone's clear. Sometimes we refer to it as we're buying a right to live there. Sometimes I think I heard they're buying the condo, maybe not like that, but I don't want anyone to misassume that that's what's going on. Can you state exactly the dynamic of what you're purchasing with that quote unquote $500,000 and what happens upon death? And I assume there's no refund if like one of them dies, but you know, what happens if when everything is out and how does that work?
Sure. Good question. And it should be clear, it's not a real estate purchase. Really, it's a contract between you and the community. So they're going to offer you the right to live there. And again, in keeping with this transition approach, you might not be in the same apartment anyway, right? You might be transitioning. So you're not buying a piece of real estate that you could turn around and sell. You're in essence purchasing a right to be there. And depending on the size of the individual apartment, that will dictate the cost of the entrance fee. So you can buy kind of a one bedroom with a den, a two bedroom, so that you can actually go up in size or even features, and that can result in a higher entrance fee as a result. So just to clarify, a better way to put it is you're buying the right to be in this community throughout your life, regardless of the care you need. The second part of your question, what happens to your entrance fee? Does it ever come back? It depends on the contract. Most of these CCRCs offer multiple contracts. Some of them will offer a non-refundable program where your entrance fee goes in and none of it comes back to your heirs or comes back to you if you decided to move and leave there during your lifetime. Another common contract is a 90% refundable contract. So in my example, if the entrance fee was $500,000 and I stayed there for my lifetime. My heirs could get 90% of that. So they'd get $450,000 coming back to them. And that helps in cases where someone was viewing their house as a potential legacy asset, right? Well, they might say, we want to spend down our assets, but we're hoping our kids will at least inherit the house. Well, the 90% contract can essentially accomplish that, right? And it's pretty straightforward. We've helped adult children of clients who've passed away in CCRCs, and it just takes a few months. And, you know, some of them have contracts where they have to fill the apartment first before they issue the check, but it's a fairly straightforward contract.
Then I've got two quick follow-up questions towards that for people scoring at home. Some have higher fees, some have lower fees. I mean, some have higher like entrance fees, some have lower entrance fees. I assume the dynamic is the higher the entrance fee, the lower the ongoing cash flow that you need to pay out, or does it not work? Like, I'm just thinking economics, right?
Yeah,
the more you pay up front, the less the ongoing. The less you pay up front, maybe the more ongoing. Is that not the case?
Not always. So the entrance fee, if you think about it, the entrance fee encompasses two things. The apartment that you're in, how big and how luxurious that is. But it's also you're prepaying for long-term care. So that's structured based on a lot of other factors. And then each facility is going to have different programs that they offer, different features that they have on site, on the campus. So those things might dictate.
Like you don't have access to the pickleball courts.
Yeah, exactly.
Wade is out. Wade is out.
That's right. Well, you think too how long-term care insurance and long-term care costs vary from one state to the other, right? I live up in New Hampshire, and here in New England, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, long-term care costs are very, very high comparatively to the other 50 states. So that's a factor as well. How much does it cost them to have doctors and nurses and professionally staffed medical professionals in the skilled nursing care facility? That's going to be more expensive in certain states than others.
Okay, so the entrance fee is more relevant towards the services you get for it. And if you're looking at different fees in one community, it's dependent on what you're getting for that. It's not necessarily a time value of money question, which I started off with. Is that a correct direction,
true,
at least?
Yeah, what we usually recommend to clients is shop around, right? Get out and do some work. Usually clients are not looking at these as soon as they retire. Most clients are not looking to jump right into a CCRC in their, say, mid-60s. This usually happens a little later,
yeah,
although it does happen younger for some. But that usually gives people plenty of time to do some research. They might have some friends who are in one. They go and visit. They take some tours and then collect pricing from several different CCRCs and do the comparison.
Then the last question I had that they could potentially be asking themselves is, this goes back to almost like a time certain annuity question. Okay, you go in, let's say, heaven forbid, you go in there 6 months later, you develop pancreatic cancer, and short term after that, you're not even there for a year. It's just how the dice rolls kind of thing in terms of the entrance fee? Or are there certain like stipulations if something happens within 3 years or whatnot?
Yep, so this gets back to the type of contract you choose for the entrance fee. Right. If you chose a non-refundable contract, then the money goes away. It's like a
single
loan that has no cash refund provision. If you chose the 90% refundable, then the loss to your heirs is significantly less, right? Because they're at least getting 90% of the refund. The other contract that's out there, some of them refer to as a declining balance refund contract. And I've seen this. The most common one is 2% per month is declining on what they will refund to you. So if you stayed for 12 months and you passed away, then 12 times 2% is 24%. Your heirs would get 76% of your refund, of your entrance fee back as a refund. So If you do the math, it's a little over 4 years, right? Once you're 4 years and you've stayed 4 years, then your heirs would get nothing back. But any point in the four-year period, if you died in that period, then they would get something back on a declining scale.
And I think another point worth emphasizing that was clear in your comments, Rob, but maybe for people first learning about CCRCs, it's not clear, that you're not waiting until you need long-term care to start looking for a CCRC, because at that point, it will be too late. This really is an option that you're looking at for independent living, where you're thinking about moving to downsizing to a community, and you're choosing the CCRC when you're still living independently, but to then facilitate having that entire lifetime provision of long-term care available to you within one broad community. But I do think it is important to make sure that point's clear, that you're not waiting for a long-term care need before.
That is a really important point, because these communities, they do underwriting sort of on two levels. They underwrite you health-wise, so there's usually a pretty extensive health questionnaire that you have to go through. And they underwrite you financially to make sure that you can afford both the entrance fee and the ongoing monthly service fees. So you can imagine it wouldn't be a good business model for them if they were only accepting people who were very close to or needed nursing care right away, right? They need someone to be in those independent living facilities for a period of time, paying those monthly service fees for the finances to work. So yes, if you were already in need or close to in need, they would reject you. They wouldn't even let you into the facility.
And so this is why it's kind of that proxy, not proxy, that's the wrong word, but it's the option relative to just buying a long-term care insurance policy. Because by default, it's baked into the whole living community.
Yeah, I think what's different is long-term care, you might do okay starting sooner, right? You might buy at a younger age and lock in a smaller annual premium on your long-term care insurance. Whereas I might not be inclined to live in a retirement community at, say, age 62 or 65. So you might be able to get away with delaying, kicking the can down the road a bit more with a continuing care retirement community, because you might be able to buy in your 70s if you're still healthy.
Well, here's the $100 question that you, more than that, right? That you have to consider, and that's, okay, let's say I'm 65, right? And I don't feel I'm ready to join one of these for whatever reason. Psychologically, it's me accepting that I'm entering this, I'm unwrapping into another stage of my life, and I don't want to do that, right? But how do you balance that? Because when you're like, okay, I've had enough like time now that I can warm up into it, and I don't need care now technically. But it's not like you just walk in and say, okay, I'll be here next month. You know, here's the check. You know, it takes a while here. And so the timing of it, you may want to explain to folks listening, how long could it take to really, from the point of, hey, do I need this? I've signed up. Now I'm on a wait.
Yeah. And a lot of these facilities have wait lists too. So that's something that you would look at as
that's what I'm getting at in the decision making.
Due diligence, right? Let's say you look at three facilities that are geographically in the area you'd like to be. And you might find one has a 1 year wait list, one has a 5 year wait list, and one has a 7 year wait list. So that might become a factor in your decision is getting on the wait list. And oftentimes to get on the wait list means putting a deposit down.
That's what I was getting. That's my next question. What are we talking about there?
It might even be 10% of the entrance fee. It might be a sizable deposit, but that would vary from one facility to the next.
And once you put that deposit in, you're pretty much committing. You're not seeing that money again. If you don't go?
I think you can get your deposit back. It's just that I think more or less that usually holds your place in line in the waiting list. So you could get it back. You're just tying up your money. I mean, again, you'd have to check with the community.
Yeah, they'll capture the float on your money, but you'll get it back. And so I'm making this simple for folks listening in. Okay, I want to go to facility A. They tell me it's going to be 5 years. I cut a check. 5 years, they give me a call and they say, we're ready for you. And then I can say, you know what? I've changed my mind.
Right. Or you could say, I'm not ready. I'd still like to be on okay, the list. But I don't know how that works.
Next available or something. Yeah.
I don't know if they bump you to the end of the list at that point,
yeah,
or if they just give you first right of refusal as additional apartments come up going forward. I'm not sure how they would handle that. Great question.
Well, I know Wade was talking. He wants his condo to get the southern sun.
Yeah.
Right. But
curious if you should be looking at a Roth conversion or what a Roth conversion even is? Head over to mcleanam.com/Roth to get McLean's free ebook, Is a Roth Conversion Right for You? And learn about when you might want to do a Roth conversion and when you might not. Just head over to mcleanam.com/Roth to download your free ebook today.
Yeah, I think let's talk also. So this can be an alternative to having long-term care insurance, but let's also talk about the scenario where someone does have long-term care insurance and they're looking to not waste money in any regard. How could they approach that sort of the different set of options and with the contracts so that they may still be able to take advantage of the long-term care insurance they have without just sacrificing all those premiums because they no longer need insurance if they choose a particular contract where they're paying upfront for long-term care that they, again, it becomes an alternative to the insurance.
Sure. So there are different flavors of CCRCs. They usually call them type A, type B. There's a lot of modifications to that, a lot of different flavors involved, if you will. But typically, the type that involves a larger entrance fee and a flat monthly service fee, regardless of how you transition for additional care, that type of CCRC doesn't usually work well in conjunction with a long-term care policy.
Because
in essence, you've paid your long-term care piece up front, and long-term care policies are usually reimbursement policies, right? They're not indemnity policies. So usually what's happening is you have a bill, a monthly invoice from the facility, the nursing home that you stay in, and then you submit that to your long-term care insurance and they reimburse you. That's usually how it works. If you think about it with that large entrance fee and steady monthly service fee, there's no change between your independent living monthly payment and your skilled nursing. So what's to reimburse? The insurance company is going to reject it and say you didn't have any additional costs for going to this skilled nursing facility.
So you're saying what happened is the entrance fee, it was baked into the entrance fee, the future care. And so it's not like you're going to submit to long-term care. Here's my $500,000 long-term care fees for the next 30 years.
Right.
They're not going to divide it, by 30, or anything like that.
There's no guarantee that you're even going to need skilled nursing.
But they must know this. This is not a uncommon situation. So
correct.
You're
so
saying
a lot of the facilities,
they have the lower cost. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, what I was going to say is a lot of these facilities have a different type of contract where you pay a slightly lower entrance fee. And then your monthly service fee is one price for independent living. And then it bumps up to another price for assisted living. And then it bumps up to an even higher level for skilled nursing. Now, all of a sudden, you have something you can submit for reimbursement to the long-term care insurance company to say, here's the delta between what I was paying, which means that's my cost of care because I couldn't fulfill these activities of daily living.
Yeah, there's a line item now that they can get reimbursed with.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, that's an area where you just talk to the community and find out, hey, is this contract one that I could use in conjunction with my long-term care policy?
Okay. And then as Michael Scott would say, how the turntables. You had said, you have to effectively, they do due diligence on you. In terms to make sure that you can pay them when need be. What are some tips on doing the diligence on them? Because you're effectively, you know, taking a, not a risk is not the right, well, it's always a risk, right? But you're putting a lot of responsibility of your future care on them. And so how do you make sure that they're up for it, if you will?
Yeah. So typically we look at the financials. So some of these are run as for-profit.
We entity. As in who?
Well, as your financial advisor, right?
Okay, so, that's fine. I just want people to know exactly. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think the typical consumer wouldn't go this deep. In fact, usually when you speak with one of these communities, you're speaking with a salesperson, a marketing person who might have a real estate background or a sales background. Typically, we ask them questions that dig into some of the financials, and it pretty quickly it goes over their head. So they're good at showing you the marketing materials and explaining the features of the community and talking about the size of the apartment and the differences. But once you get into the financials and the tax pieces, that's usually over their pay grade. So sometimes we will interview the CFO. So most of these facilities will have a chief financial officer, and we'll chat with them, and they're usually really well-versed.
Is this common though? Like someone listening in can be like, oh, you know, put me straight to the CFO. This is John Smith here. You know, how open are they to that conversation?
That's a good question. I've never done it as a consumer, so I don't know, but as a financial advisor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They've been very helpful, and they're usually very transparent too about the finances. So they usually have, you know, an annual report with all the finances. So we can look much in the same way that if you were buying a condo, you might want to look at the HOA finances to find out, do they have enough in reserves? Are there significant expenses looming in the future? So that's part of it. We also try to find out what percentage of their units are in use. So what kind of vacancy rates do they have? We look at things like how do they handle if someone doesn't have sufficient funds to pay? Oftentimes these contracts have some of the communities call it a benevolent fund, where if you can't pay, they will pay for you. But you can imagine that's a very kind and nice thing to do and not kick someone out on the street. But from a financial perspective, that could be very expensive, which gets back to why they have to do financial underwriting on every new resident to make sure that that person not only has the money now, but they're going to have the money in 10 or 20 years to keep paying the fees. So those are some of the more into the weeds kind of research that we do when we're digging.
Is there a shortcut, and I'm going to use annuities as an example, or bonds as an example, where there's a rating system? Yeah, hey, this contract is X, you know, AAA or whatnot. Is there a quick and dirty that someone can do? Because I can't imagine consumers are able to, obviously there's results vary and people can, but for the most part, the most common denominator person is not going to have the wherewithal to all of a sudden look at the footnotes on the balance sheet and put that back into the cash flow statement, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I think you're right. I don't know of a shortcut. It's a great question. It'd be nice if there was. I'm not aware of one. There might be certain organizations out there that do a good job of educating consumers. I've come across a couple. But in terms of sort of rating them, there's so many different variations, even at the same community.
Yeah.
Sometimes the same community will offer three different types of reimbursements on the entrance fee. And they will offer sometimes at different campuses, a type A at one campus, type B at the other campus. So right there's three times two, there's six variations there. Plus they might offer a dozen different apartments to choose from. So you start to do the math, you're talking 6 and 4, 48 and 96. And all of a sudden the number of choices starts to increase pretty quickly. So I'm not aware of a quick and easy way to do
it. Sure.
But to that point, this is usually a sizable entrance fee. It's a six-figure entrance fee. It's boiled into one. It's a real estate transaction. It's an insurance transaction. It's a decision about future finances and increasing monthly expenses. If ever you needed a financial advisor involved in a decision, it would be this one.
That's my, yeah, and we're not doing that because we want, hey, call now. No. It's just one of those things, you know? Because even if you do catch up on everything, you're still a sample of one, where an advisor that focuses on retirement income, I have to imagine, sees this fairly. I mean, you yourself said you've moved 12 people into these things, or you've helped make that decision. How important is it to not just visit it and pop your head in and out, but, you know, really get into it and tour it and, you know, and really immerse yourself in what's going on? Because other than the numbers, I mean, you want to make sure you kind of fit in psychologically.
Agreed.
And what do you recommend?
I think that's critical. So what we recommend is, as clients first start to think about it, we'll be talking with clients, let's say they're in their early 70s, and we're talking about their future plans, and they say something like, well, we're not going to be in this house forever. I mean, it's two floors, it's three floors, it's, you know, or our kids are over there. We're going to want something that's easy to take care of at some point. And if the client doesn't broach the topic, we will. Have you considered a CCRC? Have you ever looked at them? Do you have any friends that are living in a CCRC? And we get the wheels turning to see if they've ever considered it. And then when they're in their 70s and they're healthy, they can go tour and figure out one that works, because they're all different. Some of them are waterfront, big, beautiful places. Some are more modest. Some are in certain geographic areas. So a lot of considerations from the geographic and real estate perspective. And then in the features that they offer and the size of the facility, the wait list, all those things.
Have you seen, these are more generalized CCRs. Have you seen a lot of success with more niche down CCR, like talking like, let's say, a Jewish one, a Christian-based one, you know, something that grouping people of similar mindsets together. Have you seen those?
I have, yeah. And we haven't had, well, we had one client go into one that was more like a faith-based, mm-hmm. but there are. So that's a great point to, you know, to make to someone is, if that's important to be with like-minded individuals in that way, then by all means, start there with your due diligence process for sure.
And Rob, could you talk a little bit more about the financial planning aspects of just looking at a CCRC within the financial plan and analyzing the affordability, financing for the entrance fees and so forth? How do you approach that part of the financial planning process?
Sure. So a typical approach would be my hypothetical that I mentioned, someone in their early 70s, they're thinking eventually they're going to have to make some changes. We might begin to model in our financial plan, you know, let's model something 5 years out. So say they're 72, let's model something at 77 where you're entering a CCRC and there's an entrance fee. And how are we going to fund that? Are we going to fund it with selling the primary residence? Maybe that's the way we fund it. And so that's how we'll do it. Then we'll model in what those monthly service fees are, because those can be sizable. They might be $5,000, $6,000, $8,000 a month. It's, you know, there might be a sizable. And then, of course, we'll model in bumping up that service fee as they need assisted living care, as they transition through that continuum of care. We need to model in those increases to the monthly expenditures.
You've said, in continuing this, just because when you said this, I think people are going to be like, wait, what? $5,000, $8,000 a month? You said the interest fee is going to be six figures. You know, just expect that. Don't have sticker shock. What would be a good sticker shock warning for a monthly range?
Again, it all depends on
what. It's not going to be $500, though, a month. You know what I mean? Like,
no. Yeah,
exactly. It's
not going to look like rent, right? If rent in your area is $2,000 for a one bedroom, one bath,
exactly.
It's not going to look anything like that. It's going to be considerably more. Yeah, it's probably going to be more than double that, right? Because you're not just paying for rent. You're paying, it's a monthly service fee. You're paying for whatever services are provided there.
So if you're thinking, yeah, but I put in this down payment, No, the down it wasn't a down payment. It's a right to be in, almost like season tickets to a football. You know, you buy the license for the season tickets, but that's sure. It.
Yes, and another consideration is the entrance service. The entrance fee is fixed. You pay that one time, and it's done. The monthly service fees go on, and they increase every year. There's an inflation component to those monthly service fees, so we factor that in when we're plugging in our projection for a client. That's a great question to ask the facility, the community that you're talking to. Can you tell me what your historical inflation rates have been on the service fees for the past 10 years or however long they've been in existence? And you might find that it's been, 3.5%, 4%. It's not uncommon for it to be a little bit higher than historical inflation.
Okay. And on the financing side too, one other consideration is that entrance fee. Is there any tax deductible component? Is a portion of it treated like long-term care, so potentially a deductible medical expense?
It can be.
Around planning that for that?
Yeah, it can be. It depends on the contract. So getting back to my example of one that's non-refundable, an entrance fee that's non-refundable versus an entrance fee that's 90% refundable, big difference there, right? The non-refundable, I'm paying. And a big portion of what I paid was basically a medical expense. It was long-term care. I was prepaying for long-term care. And there have been some private letter rulings, and the IRS essentially notices that a portion of that should be tax deductible. So most facilities, most communities that we've spoken to, they bring in a third-party CPA firm that performs an audit. And that calculates for the residents under this contract, here's the portion of the entrance fee that's deductible.
Like an amortized yearly deductibility number they'll throw at you?
Yeah, it ends up being
you deduct all of it.
Every year they bring in the CPA firm, they do an audit, and they come out with two calculations. One is what's the medical deduction for the entrance fee? And what's the medical deduction for a monthly service fee, if applicable? Gotcha. So going back to my 90% refundable, if I pay in an entrance fee and 90% of it is coming back to my heirs, well, I can't get a deduction on that 90% piece. Spending it. It's not going to long-term care. It's going to my kids. So in that case, it would only be the 10% portion that's non-deductible.
Gotcha.
That I could get the. So this gets into, you mentioned, how do we plan for this? If there is a client, for example, that has a sizable tax deferred account, like an IRA account, and they're looking to do a non-deductible entrance fee, non-refundable, I should say, entrance fee. In a case like that, we've seen tax deductions that are in excess of six figures. So you can have a $100,000 tax deduction that shows up on your tax return in the year you pay the entrance fee. So we've done, for a number of clients, we've done very large Roth conversions in that year because they've got a $100,000 deduction. A great way to handle that is let's convert a bunch of the IRA to Roth in that year and let that offset. And so choosing the contract is tied into the tax piece, which might also be tied into, do they want to leave a legacy for the kids? So it's a kind of an intertwined problem that, once again, I think really requires the expertise of somebody who's done that before.
No, and I know the phrase gets thrown around, but this really is a holistic decision, from that vantage point. Here's something we haven't discussed, and we don't need to get off the financial planning portion of it, but I just don't want to forget. What happens if, let's say, Wade and I go to the CCR, and 5 years later, he's tired of listening to my music through the walls because I'm up at all hours at night playing ping pong against the wall, and he can't take it anymore. And there's no other place that he can move to in the area, and he just wants to get out. You know, what happens?
So you can always move out, right? But what happened, what you chose for an entrance fee will dictate whether or not any money comes from it. Right. So if you chose the non-refundable entrance fee, and my hypothetical $500,000 entrance fee, you can choose to move out, but you just set $500,000 on fire when you...
Wade's got to really hate me.
That's right.
And no, we're not sure. Far off, right, Wade? I'm up to 250. He'll do the 250 non-refundable. I'm not quite at 500 yet.
I will say this. We have assisted one client who moved from one unit to another unit. They wanted to upgrade. So the CCRC charged them the delta between... charge on this one plus what, minus what they already paid. So they let them move, but they had to wait until the desirable unit came free. So it's possible to make changes once you're in there, but you'd have to work that out with the community.
That's great. I think we learned a lot about CCRCs today. And so thank you so much for joining us on the show, Rob.
Yeah.
And giving us insight into the practical side.
Thank you.
You know, it's one of those areas where it's a neat business model. And we were intrigued when we first saw it.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
That, you know, that people came up with this idea, and it makes sense, right? Capitalism would dictate that somebody would come up with a way to make money and also benefit the retirees who need that sort of care. And It doesn't work for everyone, but for those that it works for, it's kind of a neat program.
And since you said it doesn't work for everyone, we can leave with this, and it's not, we did a great job on the calisthenics of getting into one of these and what happens. How many of the folks have enjoyed the decision that we've done? That, you know, you've done a dozen of these, right?
Yep.
Roughly speaking, how many of these have been like, you know what, I'm glad I did this versus, fine, take it or leave it. And how many of them were like, I've made a terrible mistake?
Yeah, 100% have enjoyed it. Have
nice.
So, but I don't think that's necessarily because they're amazing. I think it's because if somebody's getting to that point where they're willing to shell out $500,000 or $600,000 or whatever the entrance fee is, and they've taken all the steps that we have, they've made their mind up. And they already have friends there, and they've visited there, they've toured there. I think the biggest
hurdle. You don't see a lot of buyer's remorse.
Yeah, the biggest hurdle is if somebody doesn't want to live in that sort of environment in a retirement community, the numbers aren't even going to matter. They're not going to be happy.
Yeah.
Right? If they want their own individual house with their own piece of land and everything that comes with that, and they want their privacy, and they don't want a condo type living or apartment type living, then it's just not going to work for them. So I think they sort of self filter. The people that it wouldn't work for filter out and they consider one.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Alex. Yeah. And thanks everyone for joining us today on Retire with Style. And we'll catch you next week with more on long-term care.
All right, everyone. Thank you. Thanks, Rob. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
All right.
Wade and Alex are both principals in McLean Asset Management and Retirement Researcher. Both are SEC-registered investment advisors located in Tysons, Virginia. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational and educational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific securities. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor. All investing comes with a risk, including risk of loss. Past performance does not guarantee future results.